talked about.
You gotta put it in perspective.
Playing football at West Canaan may have been the opportunity of your lifetime, but I don't want your life.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
And that's for all you who were chasing rabbits today, for all you Easter freaks out there. Hope everybody had a happy Easter. And April is the time when it all happens. And as you know, April is when they have Record Store Day. I think every day should be Record Store Day.
Oh my God, what does that mean?
And now back to your regularly scheduled program, White People,
our feature presentation.
Yeah, that's us. Hey, welcome on into yet another all-new Kevin and Bean show, this time for a Tuesday, 29th of April. What the hell is going on? Got no Kevin today.
No Kevin.
Lisa's on vacation.
Lisa's on vacation.
It's me and Muggs.
You must love that, huh, Bean, already?
I would rather take a round-the-world road trip with the Armenian comedian than do a radio show with you, Beer Mug.
Really? How dare you?
Ralph will be in here in a minute with the showbiz beat. He'll save us. But how about those Kings, by the way?
Wow. You know what? I mean, that's why you can – first of all, that's why it's a series, number one.
Right.
And number two, no matter how bad it looks in the beginning, you can't count a team out ever.
Well, it's only ever happened 3 times before that a team in the NHL playoffs has come back from a 0-3 deficit. And the Kings have the possibility to do that tomorrow night in San Jose.
Yeah.
I mean, all those sports cliches that we make fun of that everyone says after every game, they say them because they're true. You really do only play one game at a time, and you can't look at it as, oh my God, we have to win 4 in a row against a very good Sharks team. You have to look at it as all we have to do is win tonight and then we're still alive.
Yep.
And, man, the Kings are just playing their hearts out.
It's going to be interesting tomorrow. You know,
very exciting.
They go back to San Jose, so.
I know, and it's tough. It's tough to win there too.
Yeah.
But it's just, as a guy who lives in a city with no hockey team and no basketball team, it's very exciting to, you know, surreptitiously live through what's going on in Southern California right now with the Ducks in the playoffs, Kings in the playoffs, Clippers in the playoffs.
I know.
So, congratulations to the Los Angeles Kings. That's fantastic. I don't know if luck was involved. It seemed to me like just pure skill last night, but I do have a story to get us started that does involve some luck. This is the second story that I have brought to you guys about somebody who wins the lottery 3 times in a month. We had that couple in Virginia, remember, who won three lotteries in a month, one of which was for $1 million. This is a guy in Chicago. His name is Christopher Kalin. He is 31 years old, describes himself as an occasional lottery player. He bought a lottery ticket at a convenience store and won a $25,000 scratch-off ticket a couple of weeks ago. My fiancé and I were so thrilled that we won the $25,000, we went out to dinner to celebrate. When we stopped at the gas station after dinner, I decided, what the hell, I'd buy another ticket. On that one, he won $1,000.
Wow.
He returned a week later to the same convenience store in downtown Chicago where he purchased the first winning ticket, bought another, went back to his office. That ticket revealed he had won another $25,000.
How is that possible? Because I play those scratchers all the time, and it seems like those things are rigged. Like, for you not to win.
I was in a 7-Eleven the other day and standing behind a guy who was buying about $25 worth of lottery tickets. And the clerk behind the counter told me that guy had been playing all day, buying lottery tickets, going out to his car, scratching them off, coming back in, buying more. He had spent $450 that one day trying to buy lottery tickets, hadn't won even a dollar, had won nothing, kept coming back in. But now let's go back to our friend Christopher Kalin. So he's got his second $25,000 ticket, but he realized as he was looking at it again in his office that he had read the ticket incorrectly, and he hadn't won $25,000. He had won $250,000 on that ticket.
Oh, my God.
It just worked out. Just a hunch, he said, of his decision to buy a third lotto ticket. Obviously, people play the lottery because they hope to win. He said he's glad that he didn't win more. He said, I'm happy that I don't have to worry about, like, the stories I see of people winning $50 million and being hounded by people you know and you don't know. He says his phone has already been ringing off the hook since word got out that he's won 3 in a row. He says, this prize is perfect. It's big enough to where it's obviously life-changing, but not so big that it'll be a problem. He plans to pay off his student loans, buy a home, pay for his wedding with the prize money, and save for his daughter's college fund. It's life-changing, and it's a little surreal. Life-changing in a sense that you don't have to go in debt for a wedding or to buy a house.
So now, does he keep winning for the rest of his career in playing? I mean, or is it he's used it all up right now? He has to have used it all up.
Well, there's no limit on how much you're allowed to win. I mean, you can buy as many winning lottery tickets as you want. The question is he ruined now? Is he going to be chasing this high? Yeah. I mean, look, he didn't stop after winning 25. He didn't stop after winning 1,000. It says here he's not going to stop after winning the 250,000. So is he just going to keep buying more and more lottery tickets because he feels like he's due to win again? Is it going to ruin him? Is he going to end up being broke because he's spent hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on lottery tickets? I don't know what this guy's future is. But that's pretty lucky. I mean, in under a month to win three different times in the Illinois lottery, that's a pretty remarkable story.
That's crazy.
Because there are people who have been paying, you know, playing for years and years and years who have never won a damn thing.
I think the most I've ever won on one scratcher, which is pretty good, it was $100.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about winning $100 on a scratcher is that probably pays for however much you spent on the lottery in a year. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Exactly.
So at least like you feel like you're not going into debt, you know, you're not losing money on the lottery. But good times. All right, let's talk about today's all-new Kevin Wheaton Show. What do you say?
No, ma'am.
Well, we're going to do it anyway. Got a good program today, including Jim Gaffigan, very funny comedian. Welcome him back to the Kevin Wheaton Show on the program today. Also, Kings fan number one. He was our correspondent a couple of years ago when Los Angeles won the Cup. Colin Hanks, a great actor on a terrific show called Fargo. He's going to be joining us on the program today. We got Kings of Leon tickets in the fourth row that you can win on the program today. We've got the craziest story about a kindergarten that you'll hear in a while. And our friend Petros Papadakis brings us up to speed with what's going on with the Clippers controversy, the Doc Rivers press conference yesterday, and what the NBA is likely to rule today about the future of Donald Sterling owning the Los Angeles Clippers. All that plus Ralph's got the showbiz beat, and that's next right here on the world-famous K-Rock. Vampire Weekend, duh. On the world-famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ, Tuesday morning. Hey, Ralph Garman.
It is Tuesday. That means new release day. Here's what's available on CD and DVD. Indie Cindy by the Pixies. How long has it been since we had new Pixies music?
It's been a while.
It's been a long time, right? Most Messed Up by Old 97s. Everyday Robots by Damon Albarn. On DVD, in case you missed it in theaters, Legend of Hercules starring Kellan Lutz.
Boy, that came and went in a hurry.
Yeah. I have bad news for Kellan and also for The Rock, who's got a pending Hercules film. No one gives a rat's ass about Hercules anymore. When you live in a time of Iron Man and Captain America and Batman, when you have modern-day superheroes, our new myths, populating the screens, nobody wants to see a guy wrestle a lion and steal a fleece.
Game.
Hercules is it's set way, way, way in the past. It's not just a strong guy today.
No, it's Hercules in the ancient Greek times.
Yeah.
I got
no time for that.
Yeah. Labor Day, starring Kate Winslet and Josh Brolin. Bad Country, starring Matt Dillon, Willem Dafoe, and Amy Smart. I want to see that. It looks terrifying and scary, but in like a, not a horror movie way, like in a good movie way. And TV on DVD, Mr. Selfridge, the new British series starring our buddy from Entourage.
The Piff.
Jeremy Piven.
You don't watch this, but I am obsessed with it.
You're obsessed with Mr. Selfridge?
I love it. Love it so much.
What is it about it that you love so much?
It's just great. It's well done. It has a lot of the drama that you get in those, you know, Downton Abbey type shows. But it's just a well done, well cast, great storyline, great play. And it's a you know, fascinating, based on a real guy, an American who went to Britain and revolutionized the department store world,
right,
with the Selfridge store that's still there today on Oxford Street. And he's just a fascinating, fascinating guy. And
now
now we're getting into World War II, and the government is pressing him into service as a spy.
Oh, son of a bitch!
It's pretty cool. He's the guy, Ralph, who invented Shopping Days Till Christmas. He's the guy who came up with that. How many Shopping Days Till Christmas?
Huh. Which must be perfect for you.
I love it.
Since you count one-third Christmas as a thing.
I do.
You must love counting down.
He also invented the bargain basement. He invented annual sales. I mean, it's just, he's a fascinating
dude. Selfridge has just given us so much.
Right?
I had no idea.
See what you're missing? You like Jeremy Piven, by the way.
I do. I love Jeremy Piven.
This is one of his best roles. I think you would enjoy the
show.
Does
he go, Lloyd? Does he do that at all?
He never yells for Lloyd.
Then I'm not interested.
that?
Hey, it looks like George Clooney is getting married.
What?
Yesterday I was casting my doubts on this story simply because People magazine seemed to take a picture of his girlfriend, Amal Alamuddin, wearing a diamond ring and just extrapolating out into the fact that they were engaged. But it looks like, although Clooney hasn't come forward and said it himself, the law firm that she works at has confirmed it.
Wow.
In a way. The staff of Doughty Street Chambers, which is the name of the law firm, issued a statement sending their best wishes and congratulations to their employee, Amal Alamuddin, and George Clooney. So, there you go.
What is the reason for George Clooney to marry this person? Explain that to me.
That is the question.
He's had, A, he's been married before, but B, he's also had long-term relationships.
Yes.
That don't last.
Right.
Why does he think this one's going to?
Well, friends are saying this woman is different. She's not only beautiful, but has brains and class, and she has everything that he likes in a person in terms of engaging in political discussions, and she's got the whole package.
And these other girls that he was dating, including our what's her name, our Dancing with the Stars lady that we love,
Keebler, Stacey.
Yes,
Keebler.
Stacey Keebler. He did not find those qualities in them.
I'm guessing he didn't have a lot of conversations about eco-political situations in Darfur with the Keebler elf.
But
I'm just guessing.
But look at her legs.
I know. Look, I think there's a reason why he was dating her. Yeah. I don't think it was so they could discover whether UNICEF was doing enough with their poverty program.
Wow. We never thought we'd live to see the day that George Clooney would get married.
Look, I know.
Yeah, we still may not, but right now it's looking promising, you say.
Yeah. It is game on between Jennifer Lopez and Kim Kardashian. Yeah. They're having a butt off. They apparently do not like each other. The National Enquirer's got a story saying that Jennifer Lopez does not like Kim Kardashian and is casting doubts as to whether her butt is real or not.
Just look at that butt.
Yeah.
That is a tight butt.
Yeah, that's a tight butt. Now, Jennifer, of course, famously rose to the A-list thanks to her butt.
Sure.
Her butt was legendary. And maybe she's a little jealous that Kim's butt is overshadowing her own butt.
Oh, I think Kim's butt is far more famous than J-Lo's now.
Oh, well, that must kill her.
Yeah.
She, according to the story again, friends say she thinks that Kim Kardashian is pathetic. Well, you can't really deny that. But. And the Kardashian family battling with stars of its own, Kendall and Kylie Jenner, apparently in a fight with Selena Gomez. They have unfriended each other on Facebook.
Oh, that's serious.
Yeah. I can't believe I'm reporting the schoolyard fight as if it's something. It's how embarrassing for everyone.
Selena!
Yeah, Selena.
Selena!
Selena.
Miss Gomez, Selena! God damn it!
Yeah, that's how I feel. And another late night TV shakeup. Yesterday was reported that Craig Ferguson, host of the Late Late Show on CBS, will be leaving CBS at the end of the year when his contract ends.
Now, this is not a surprise.
This is a surprise.
It is a surprise.
Yeah, it is a surprise because no one knew that Ferguson was planning on leaving the network. In fact, it was widely speculated at the time when David Letterman announced his retirement in 2015 that Ferguson might be one of the short list to take over that slot. But Ferguson says that he had been planning to leave CBS this year all the time. He was going to leave this summer, actually.
Hmm.
But then, in the wake of Letterman's announcement, the network came to him and said, can you hold on just a little bit longer while we figure out exactly what's going on with our late night? And he said, sure. He said he had never really coveted Letterman's slot, never really wanted to. He felt that 10 years was a long time to do any show, and he was very happy with what he did, but he wanted to leave before it became a chore. So plans were always in the works for him to leave at the end of this contract, which will be at the end of this year. So another big slot for CBS to fill in their late night. So
what a talented, smart guy, though, Craig Ferguson. I think the world of him.
Look, he said, you know, it was a lot of fun to do, but it was nothing he particularly ever wanted to do. He kind of fell into it, and it was a blast, but it was starting to feel like he had done everything he could do with that kind of show.
Well, when you spend the night talking to a robot, I mean, I guess at some point you get tired of that.
Well, that's the good news. In his statement, he said he and CBS are consciously uncoupling. He said, but we will spend the holidays together and share custody of the fake horse and the robot skeleton, both of which we love very much. So it's nice that they can find a way to work through their differences.
So CBS kind of robbed us of the ability to spend months speculating as to who is going to take over for Dave with that quick Colbert announcement.
Right.
But at least now we can all wonder who's going to take over for Craig.
I agree.
On a show that none of us will watch.
And it won't be Chelsea Handler. That's good news. Apparently,
yeah, that is good
news. She's going to do a show over on Netflix, which will make her so much easier to avoid.
Sure.
That's what I love about that new system of delivery for her.
Yeah, you won't even accidentally come across her.
Nope, I'll never be just flipping around channels and have to see her again, so it works out well. Today's celebrity birthdays. Oh, I love her so much. Megan Boone is 31 years old today. Are you watching that damn Blacklist?
Is she the dumbest FBI agent ever?
She's the best FBI agent ever.
Stupid.
What is wrong with you?
We don't have time now. Let's table this conversation for next hour.
What is wrong with you?
Because she constantly makes terrible decisions to the agent
and puts
herself and the agency in jeopardy.
You're
that's
a
why.
Fool who should be murdered. I love that show. I love her, and I love Megan Boone. She should have been Wonder
Woman.
How old
is she?
She is 31 years old today.
Oh, right.
Tyler Bean. Oh, is that okay with you?
Yeah, she's
disappointed.
Well, she's on the upper end of you being able to love her, but she's fine for now.
You son of a bitch. Tyler Labine, our buddy. That new show, Deadbeat, which is very funny, by the way. He's 36 years old. Master P is 44 years old. Uma Thurman's 44. Carney Wilson of Wilson Phillips is 46. Michelle Pfeiffer is 56. Daniel Day-Lewis is 57. Actress Kate Mulgrew is 59. And comedian Jerry Seinfeld. How old am I? How many candles on my birthday cake? He is 60 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
So last week here on the show, I told you about the Mars One update. Mars One, of course, is the private organization. This is not a NASA, not a government-run organization, but it's a private company that plans to send astronauts to Mars. And it's a one-way trip. And lots of people worldwide signed up for this thing when they made this announcement a couple of years ago. Over 80,000 people signed up to be these astronauts. They've narrowed it down now to 700 people. And I was telling you about two of them that live in Southern California. One is named Sue Ann Peen. The other is named Mario Bonnison. Neither of them are, you know, have astronaut training or are even scientists, but they may be the type of people that they are looking for Mars One. You know, I went back to the files here from the last time that we talked about this, and here's a little bit of an interview from Boz Landorp. He is the co-founder of Mars One, talking about the kinds of people that they are looking for to send up to Mars on a one-way trip.
We have a good team member in our team. His name is Norbert Kraft. He's worked at the Japanese Space Agency and at NASA. For crew selection for astronauts, and he has pointed out that the most important thing is not the medical skills and the engineering skills. The most important thing is they need to be the kind of people that you and I want to be stranded with on an uninhabited island.
Now, that's me. That's all about me. I'm exactly the kind of person that you'd want to be stranded with on an island. So that's why I've applied, and that's why I'm going to Mars. At least I hope so. I think Boz Landorp is on the phone with us right now, co-founder of Mars One, joining us on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock right now. Hello, sir.
Yes, good morning. How are you today?
Or can I just call you boss, since we're going to be working together so closely once I am picked for the mission?
Well, it might be a little early for you to making that use of my name and that word.
Okay. All right. Well, you know how desperately I want to go. Ever since the mission was announced, I have been one of the people who has been saying, please, please, pick me, pick me. I want to go on the one-way trip to Mars.
Yes, we have received your application. And as you mentioned, we have narrowed it down to 700
mm-hmm.
potential candidates for the trip to Mars. And so now we're starting the process of interviewing and vetting the many people who have applied for what's going to be a one-way trip to Mars.
This is fantastic. I promise you, Mr. Landorp, you will not be disappointed. I will be the hardest working little astronaut you ever hired.
Well, that's good to hear. Even someone who's, of course, dedicated and wants to work hard to be on the trip to Mars. Of course, we are still raising the money for the trip. We haven't come up with the money yet. We are trying to raise $6 billion for the trip.
Yeah, that's That's a lot of cash. That's that goes beyond a Veronica Mars Kickstarter, doesn't it?
Yes, well, so far we've raised over $84,000, so we're almost there.
All right, so we got a ways to go on the money. Yes. But what can I do to better ensure that I am selected as one of your astronauts?
Well, I'm looking at your application here. I want to ask some follow-up questions.
Yes, sir, of course.
It says, many of our the things we're looking for in an astronaut are someone who is curious and we think that you're there. You get that one,
yes,
for sure.
I am very curious about many, many things. Yes. Absolutely.
Creative is important, and with the line of work that you do, it's apparent that you have creativity.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Resourcefulness. You must be able to solve problems and work in a pressure situation, and with your work in radio, it seems like that is also good.
Well, I do work with Beer Mug 5 days a week. I think that shows a lot of patience.
Your IQ is very good. You have a good IQ. It's nice.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you, sir. It sounds like I'm in.
You have to be adaptable. You have to be flexible. You can't be too rigid when it comes to, certain, routines that you must stick with or anything. So adaptable is important. And looking at the interviews we've done with some of the people you work with,
No on that. We don't have Denny's on Tuesday on Mars and IHOP on Thursday?
I don't even know what these IHOP is you keep mentioning in your application. It's written over and over and over again, IHOP, IHOP, IHOP. And I thought initially you were saying you are a good, physically fit hopper. But no, it's something about pancakes.
Pancakes, yes. All right, well, that's okay. I mean, you can't kick me off the ship just based on one thing.
Of course, not anyone will have all the qualities. So we're looking for many different things.
So I'm still in.
Works well with others is an important part of,
Hey, hold on a second here. Who told you I don't work well with others?
Well, we have to ask around, and we talk to your friends and co-workers if they would give you a thumbs up or thumbs down in that area. And,
that is painful. I'm sorry to hear
physical fitness.
That.
Physical fitness, you can't pass out a lot. Oh, you okay? Is that all right? You're right there. Did you break any ribs on a radiator?
No, I'm okay.
Oh, you're good? Hey, you okay over there? You all right?
I'm okay. I just slept for a second. I'm all right. I'm back.
You're missing a few organs, too. That can't be good for the trip. That's the problem.
This is not sounding very good for me now.
Friends, the friends and social aspect. You have to be able to get along with people, and everyone wants to be stranded on the desert island with you.
Yes, it's very, very tight quarters. Oh, come on a second. Wait a minute. Hold on a second here.
Really, that's so good. We asked you, could you give us a list of friends who we could talk to? You said not applicable.
Well, I wanted to get back to you on that once I come up with some names.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, from now here, from how we look, not so much for you to go Mars.
Oh, this is so disappointing to me.
Hey, wait a minute, though. Do you have any money?
Yeah, I could certainly chip in there if that would help.
All right, you're going to Mars.
Yes! Our friend Petros Papadakis from the PMS show joins us just after 7 o'clock to talk about what the NBA is likely to do to Clippers owner Donald Sterling. Today is the day they're supposed to make their decision. Also, we'll talk to comedian Jim Gaffigan next hour. Hey, Ralph Kramer, I'm glad you're in here.
Yeah.
Got an update on one of your favorite topics. I know you have been surprised, as I have, at how many stories are in the news lately about teachers having sex, female teachers having sex with their male students.
Yeah, some people say it's because we have more access to information now on the internet and blah, blah, blah. I would beg to differ. In fact, some sociologists are calling it a sexpidemic of cases where female teachers have been accused, convicted, or are suspected of having sexual relationships with their students.
And by the way, it's not like you see this story once every couple of years.
It used to be that way.
It did.
Remember Mary Kay Letourneau had sex with that guy?
That was a nationwide scandal. The entire country was just gripped that something as shocking as that could ever happen. And now I feel like about every 2 weeks we see another story like this. Alicia Gray is one woman who was in the news for earlier this year, a married woman in Alabama. She's a mathematics teacher. She pled guilty to charges that she had sex with a 14-year-old student. Now, the reason she's back in the news is because she has found Jesus since then. And she did a video for the church that she now attends, the Deeper Life Fellowship. And here's a little bit of her talking about how she's all different now. She's not going to have sex with her students anymore.
Okay. Of course, I'm very sorry for my selfish actions and the choices that I made out of insecurity and hurts that I felt myself. And I'm sorry for those. And so thankful that God has changed me and shown me my identity in Jesus Christ, where I won't make those same selfish decisions that hurt other people. So because that joy that he's given me and that changed identity, I no longer have to feel shame about the person I once was, and I will never be again, because I know who I am in Jesus.
First of all, the pastor needs to turn down the music.
Is she in an elevator? That's the easy listening.
But second of all, how bummed out are her students at her math class that she found Jesus?
Look, we had fun with this topic for some time. We're like, oh, well, you know, it's what difference does it matter? It's a teenage, 15-year-old boy. Heck yeah, I wish that would happen to me. But it's not funny anymore. It's just, it's insane. The number of women, look, this story just happened this week, made me think of it. A 42-year-old teacher has been arrested for giving one of her middle school students a full contact lap dance in front of the entire class. These women don't even have the decency to abscond with these kids to a motel anymore. Now they're giving lap dances in front of the class in middle school.
What are these circumstances under which that would have ever happened?
It was his birthday, Bean.
Okay.
The student was turned 15. He turned 15, and Felicia Smith of Houston, Texas, 42 years old, rubbed her hands all over the boy's body, then dropped to her knees and rubbed his head between his legs.
Who's the dirty snitch that called that to the authorities' attention?
Well, I'm guessing somebody in the class said, "This is making me slightly uncomfortable." The boy says he slapped Smith's rear end several times during the incident. He's spanking his teacher while she's giving him a lap dance. And the probable cause affidavit notes that the teacher's moves put the boy in a state of arousal.
Well, how could it not?
She told police the students convinced her to grind on the boy as a joke. Oh, that's hilarious.
What is... And look, I'm not trying to minimize the potential negative side effects of this kind of abuse by an adult over a minor. But what's the real damage to a young man that has this happen to him, do you think, Ralph?
I genuinely think that it skews their perspective of women and sexual relationships forever. You know, and look, obviously, I'm no prude. I'm a freak, and we've talked about this in the past of all my different sexual adventure things like that. I'm all fine for anything that happens between consenting adults. Uh-huh. But if you're 15 years old and a teacher, a figure of authority, someone who is supposed to be in a position of mentor, teacher, if she sexualizes that relationship, specifically by giving you a lap dance in front of your other students in a classroom setting, I think that warps your perspective about school, about authority, about women, about the nature of relationships. I think at 15, you are not capable of processing that information in a healthy
way. And you need to be able to look at some people in a non-sexual way.
Right.
That's what you're saying.
Not that all relationships with someone of the opposite sex is necessarily going to be sexualized.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Especially when it's someone in authority or someone you're supposed to be respectful of or have a mentor-teacher relationship with. I think once that line is crossed and once that gets blurry, I think it affects you for the rest of your life.
And when you're that young, when you're like many of the children in these stories, 13, 14, 15 years old, you're still forming what's going to be the way you're going to approach life. And that's probably going to stick with you. Why do you suppose... There are dozens of these stories, female teachers having sex with underage males a year. Dozens.
Look, Dave, the King of Mexico, did some research for us. He gave us a couple pages from a website that has, I don't know, 20-some-odd pages of cases like this over the past few years. I've got two dozen here in my hands of women who have been convicted or accused of assaulting students, male and female, while they were either teacher's aides or teachers themselves. And I can't, that's the thing for me. I can't comprehend why these women, who are not all 20-somethings, by the way. I've got a 60-year-old woman here. 60-year-old married woman had a 4-week heated affair with a 17-year-old.
Wow.
This woman here, 34 years old, would rent hotel rooms, provide them with alcohol and pot, and had two women and two boys at the same time in her room. I mean, that blows me away is what is going on with these women that they feel, I don't know, do they feel so insecure sexually perhaps that the only way they can have an upper hand is to take advantage of an age difference or take advantage of the power that they have in the classroom to try to coerce
these young people who may not know any better into sexual relationships with them?
I don't know. And I also don't know if it's that a 15-year-old today looks more like an adult than a 15-year-old looked like maybe when that teacher was growing up. It seems like kids are growing up faster, too. Is that part of it, maybe? Is that they seem like they're not as off limits because they don't look like little kids anymore?
Maybe for some of them, anyway. Look, I'm sure there, and I know this for a fact, when I went to high school, there were teachers, male teachers, who I became friends with after the fact, who'd be like, oh, man, when you, that girl in your class, remember her? It's like, boy, she was really attractive. It was hard to be a teacher and look at certain students because they were so young and
especially if you're a
attractive
young teacher and there's only a 7-8 year age difference between the teacher and the student in some cases.
But the fact remains, you are a teacher, and with that job comes a certain responsibility to sublimate your own sexual feelings and to say, okay, I'm not going to act on those things. Sure, we're all human and we can look at a young attractive person and say, wow, that's great.
That's a feeling.
But you have to say, but I'm a teacher and I'm in a position of trust and power here, and I can't cross that line because it's just not the right thing to do for these kids. If you cared at all about the kids, you would just not do that. And I can't imagine that because 15-year-old guys are looking so great to these women in their 20s, 30s, 40s sometimes, that they aren't cognizant of the fact that there has to be some separation. There has to be a line there that they can't cross.
So you're uptight.
Yeah, that's me. I'm uptight.
I attend South Park Elementary, and one of the teachers is having sex with a student.
Oh, my God!
This is terrible.
You did the right thing telling the police, Brad. Now, who is the teacher? What's his name?
Well, it isn't a guy teacher. It's a woman.
A woman?
Yeah, she's having sex with a boy.
Oh, but she's ugly, right?
Well, no, not really. It's the kindergarten teacher, Miss Stevenson.
The blonde?
Yeah.
Some young boy's having sex with Miss Stevenson?
Yes.
Nice. Has she performed oral sex on him?
I think so.
Nice. Nice. So wait, what's the crime? The crime is she isn't doing it with me.
And a cup of today's soup for just $6.25. Subway Eat Fresh, add a dollar for premiums and supremes. Limited time only, no side substitutions. Additional charge for extras, plus tax. I'm Nick Poliokini, K-Rock Traffic.
By the way, in answer to the emails I've gotten on the topic, I don't know whether the traffic guy is actually on cocaine or not. I don't know the man, but sounds like he's doing a good job, but just fast.
I like his energy.
I do too. Hey, 6:53, we'll talk to the P coming up right after the top of the hour. First, though, time for the showbiz beat. Here's Ralph.
Another shakeup in late-night television. CBS is losing another one of its late-night hosts, Craig Ferguson. Craig Ferguson, Scottish host of The Late Late Show, announced yesterday to his studio audience that he's going to be leaving CBS at the end of the year.
At the end of this year, I will be stepping down as the host of this show. Thanks, everybody. That was quite convincing. I'll be stepping down at the end of this year in December, and I'll go and do something else. Probably I'm thinking carpentry. But I haven't made my mind up yet. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I feel like doing this show for 10 years, that's enough.
He said he and the network are consciously uncoupling, but they will still spend the holidays together and share custody of the fake horse and robot skeleton, both of whom we love very much. So, glad. It's a good breakup.
You don't think he was hanging on to that Late Late Show because he, when Letterman retired, he would thought he would take over, and now that that's not happening, he's just decided to quit the thing altogether? That's not what's going on here?
I think it's the opposite of that. In an interview I read yesterday, he said, look, people are going to believe what they want to believe, but he had been planning for leaving the show for some time. In fact, asked CBS if he could leave during the summer. And they said, can you hold on till the end of the year because something may be going on with Dave. Mm. And then Letterman announced his retirement and threw sort of a spanner in the works, as Craig Ferguson said. So really, he had no intentions ever of taking over for Dave. In fact, he was pretty much done with his show and done with talk shows in general. He wanted to go on and do other things. You know, he started off as an actor.
Right.
And as a musician before that. And he said that's part of the fun of the entertainment business for him is to do something new every time. And
well, good for him then. If he's happy, if this is not a Conan situation where he's being squeezed out, I'm happy for him then.
And, he got paid for not being taken over Letterman, too. You know. So
right. Hey, I'm not taking over for Letterman. Why am I not getting paid?
Good word. I'd like to take over for Craig Ferguson. I don't want to put my hat in the ring.
Sure.
Give me a late-night talk show. I can talk to a fake horse and a robot skeleton. I could do that. Speaking of television news, good news for Game of Thrones fans. Best numbers ever for this past Sunday's episode of Game of Thrones. 8.4 million viewers. tuned in to find out Joffrey's murderers. You watching that Game of Thrones?
I don't watch that, but everyone I know in my life, from my wife to friends, everybody's obsessed with it.
Yeah.
I never got on board.
It's a great show. John Oliver's new show, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver from The Daily Show. He picked up 1.4 million total viewers in his first episode, so pretty good for his debut. Because those are about the same numbers that The Daily Show and Bill Maher get, so good for him. And it looks like it's happening for real. George Clooney engaged. Yesterday, I poo-pooed the story because I said I didn't hear any confirmation from anybody reliable.
Plus, he hadn't checked it with you yet. And usually, you and the Clune Dogger, right. You know, you run things by each other.
Usually, over a nice chilled glass of limoncello, we decide what our futures are going to be. But the law firm that Amal Alamuddin, his girlfriend, works for, issued a statement sending their best wishes and congratulations on the engagement. So, I guess if lawyers say it, it's got to be true, right?
They can't lie.
That's right. And finally, we're starting to get some opinions from the entertainment world about Donald Sterling and the situation of the audio recording of the L.A. Clippers owner and the racist statements he made therein. Fallout is starting to come, and we're starting to get responses from some of the biggest names in show business. For example,
he's a dick.
Victor Willis, the cop from The Village People, has released a statement saying, Sterling, you're banned from playing YMCA or any of my music at Clippers games. And I mean it. That's right. It's fun to stay at the YMCA.
Why should the Clippers even take the court tonight if they can't play YMCA at the stadium?
Is that a thing?
I didn't know it was.
Is there a recurring theme of the Clippers playing Village People music at their games?
I wasn't aware that anyone had been playing Village People records. Congratulations to Victor for getting this name out there.
I think he's saying it just so people remember he made music. you know what, Dawson? I don't want you playing any of my old band Revolver's music either on the court. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. Jerry Seinfeld! He's 60 years old! 60 years old today. Kate Mulgrew is 59. Daniel Day-Lewis is 57. Michelle Pfeiffer turns 56 today. She is aging better than any woman in Hollywood.
Would you like a bell for Miss Pfeiffer?
I would. I mean, naturally aging just spectacularly.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to have had any plastic surgery or anything going on. Or if she has, it's just right. She knows how to do it.
She found a better doctor than most people.
Yeah, because she looks terrific. Carney Wilson of Wilson Phillips is 46 years old. Uma Thurman is 44. Master P is 44. Tyler Labine celebrates his 36th birthday. And the best damn FBI agent on television, Megan Boone from The Blacklist, is 31 years old today.
Says you.
Yeah, says me. I love her and I love everything about that show. And I will not have you cast aspersions on her any longer, Bean.
Which of her wigs is your favorite
down.
That she wears on
we're
that show?
We're going to throw down! I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
I don't know if it's the best day of her life, but Gemma Linares of Covina is having a pretty good day because she just won tickets in the fourth row to see Kings of Leon. K-Rock is presenting the band October 3rd and 5th, the 3rd at the Hollywood Bowl, the 5th at the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater. Tickets are available now, and we're going to be giving away tickets in the fourth row all day long today, then third row tomorrow, then second, and then front row Friday is happening. Get the details at krock.com. Been looking forward to this all day. Our friend The P, sports radio professional on the Petros and Money Show on AM 570, Fox Sports Radio, weekday afternoons, plus a longtime Clipper fan, P. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show, my friend. How are you?
What's cracking, Bean? How are you? It's nice to talk to you in a civil manner.
I am looking forward to nobody yelling, no tantrums being thrown, nobody hanging up the phone in disgust. So let's try to keep it like men here, okay?
Well, the only weird coincidence is that Juan Pablo did emerge last night in the crowd at Dancing with the Stars.
We have no time to discuss Juan Pablo.
Right?
No,
we're
not going to talk about Juan Pablo. This
not
is
why
about,
you're having me on.
Not at all, Pete.
Not going to come in there, okay.
Hey, listen, you had 3 hours to chew this over with money yesterday. I know you've got a lot of thoughts on the matter. Where's your head out right now that you've had a few days to digest the Donald Sterling tapes?
Well, you know, it's just amazing the more and more I think about it because, and I've used this analogy before, but I'll use it again. I mean, when Marion Barry got set up by that woman to smoke crack in that hotel room, Marion Barry, who was the mayor of Washington, D.C., the headline wasn't that he got set up by some evil woman. I mean, the headline was that the mayor is a crackhead.
Right.
And that's kind of the situation here. I mean, Donald Sterling was set up by by this young girl that he was basically paying for, and it was an arrangement that, that he's had with many women, you would assume. At least one other one has taken him to court in a very similar manner. But that's not really the headline here. The headline is the Clippers owner, an owner in the NBA, is a racist, and right. he's on tape talking in a way that's just not tolerable for people in 2014. Now, I gave you guys credit yesterday and over the weekend. I mean, Kevin and Bean has been on the cutting edge of this, mostly because Kevin hates the Clippers.
But Pete,
you guys talked about what kind of guy Donald Sterling was for years, and if anybody was willing to do some digging, you know, they would know that. But now everybody in town and around the world, to be honest, I mean internationally, Bean, they have an opinion about this.
Right. It's not much of a bombshell. It's not much of a bombshell for those of us in Southern California or following Southern California sports, because we've known what a dick this guy is for years and years and years. But everybody was willing to play for him. Doc Rivers was willing to come coach the team. Great players like Chris Paul were willing to come to the team, even though they already knew he's a racist. What's changed now that all of a sudden everybody's up in arms and sponsors are pulling everything else just because we heard it with our own ears? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, it might not make sense, but I think that's what it is. And we talked to some people yesterday on the radio, Matt and I, and they made it a little clearer. I mean, these allegations against Donald Sterling in the past, the federal lawsuits he settled, the state lawsuits he settled, I mean, they were all people suing him that had a grievance. You know, they wanted something. So it's one thing for a guy who spends his whole life in court to be in court and to be accused of all these different things. It's another thing to hear it with your own ears. I also
right.
believe that there's a separation. Nobody's really playing for the owner. I mean, nobody in sports is really doing that. You might get a unique situation where Magic Johnson is close with Dr. Buss or something like that, but that's not really the norm. And ultimately, when you're actually on a team, wherever that team is, if it's in the higher up levels of sports, it really isn't about the logo. It's about you, your career, your teammates, their career. And if you guys have a good thing going, you're playing for each other. Now, even with that going on, with the Clippers, this is a sticky situation. I mean, no one has ever seen anything like this, and it is unprecedented. And the one thing I do want to mention, you know, the Dr. Buss part of this is not should not go undiscussed, because this Dr. Buss was friends with Donald Sterling. Donald Sterling liquidated some of Dr. Buss's assets so he could buy the Lakers way back then. If there was no Donald Sterling, Dr. Buss likely wouldn't have had the Lakers. And Donald Sterling was the one that was convinced by Dr. Buss to buy the Clippers. So this guy's the longest tenured owner in the NBA since Dr. Buss has passed away. And it's not going to be easy to root him out.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because there was a lot of talk on TV yesterday from attorneys who took a look at this contract in the NBA, these bylaws, and said it's not as easy as you might think. You can't just fire a guy who owns a team. It seems to be very specific that they mentioned just gambling is the only reason they can take a team away from a guy. You can't force him to sell just because he holds unpopular opinions, right?
Well, it's an interest. I'm not a lawyer, and not only that, this isn't a court of law. I mean, this is the NBA, and they operate by their own rules, and their bylaws are complicated, and we had a lawyer on yesterday that intimated some different procedures in which they could force him or seize the team or force him to sell, but I don't think that's going to happen. In order to do so, they're going to need all 29 other owners on the same page to want to throw this guy out. And we had some people, including Matt, make the point on the radio yesterday, hey, a lot of these owners have girlfriends. A lot of these owners have skeletons in their closet. I mean, we're not talking about a lot of these owners being blatant racist, but if they see a team, a guy forced to sell, you know, they're not that into that. And Mark Cuban called it a slippery slope last night after their playoff game. So I don't think the owner, unless the owners are all for getting rid of him, I don't think they will. That makes the situation, I just think they're going to suspend him. The weird thing is, Bean, he can't own the team because no one's going to want to play there and no one's going to want to coach there. There's going to be And everybody's going to have probable cause not to want to do it. So even though they can't get rid of him, it's hard to imagine the Clippers will continue to exist with Donald Sterling as the owner.
It is. What about the idea that the owner of the Rockets, Mr. Alexander, floated yesterday, which is the league has the power to make all of the Clipper players free agents so that they can leave and basically Donald Sterling won't have a team?
Yeah, that would happen. Or they could all just break their contracts and go to court and say it's not a comfortable work environment. I can't play for this racist. And there's not – I don't think judge or jury in America is going to have a problem with that. So I think he's going to have to sell the team. But here's the problem. We're dealing with a crazy old man.
Yeah,
I mean, we're not
right.
dealing with you or I. Right. Well,
and a crazy old man who's a billionaire, too, by the way, who just can afford to play with this and put it in limbo. It doesn't matter to him. He doesn't need the money.
Right, and he honestly doesn't care about public opinion. And for
right.
anybody to assume how he feels in this situation is irresponsible. Because
and he's made no comment, right, since these tapes broke.
Not really. I mean, he went out to dinner with his wife, and she screamed at some paparazzi that he's not a racist. This is the same wife who's suing that girlfriend that
right.
He had that long relationship with and had these conversations with. I mean, that's the creepy part of this, Bean. I mean, the guy's a racist, and that's wrong. I mean, that's not creepy. That's just offensive. But the creepy part is it's an 80-year-old man and a 20-something-year-old girl going back and forth about her Instagram.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
That's the bottom line about
while
it.
I get you some juice, honey. What's likely to happen? There's supposed to be an announcement today, right, from the NBA. What's likely going to be said?
Well, he's going to be suspended. You know, he's going to be condemned and suspended. He'll probably be removed from the NBA Board of Governors because he is tenured, but it's going to be tricky. These owners do not want their cheese moved, so to speak. And even if it means protecting Donald Sterling, that might be the case. But like you said, I can't imagine anybody playing for this guy in the future, but he's a crazy old man. He might just dig in and go nuts and maybe wait for this to blow over, even though I thought once the president chimed in that it wasn't going to blow over. So,
right.
I mean, this is one of those situations where nobody knows what's going to happen, not on the court, not off the court, and I just feel awful for Dave, the King of Mexico.
I feel awful for him and you and all the Clippers fans. All right, last question. First of all, Doc Rivers has been handling this masterfully. I love every word that's come out of his mouth since this thing broke, and he really is heartbroken, and he hates what it's doing to his team. Does he have what it takes to get them to focus on playing basketball tonight and not thinking about this horrible news event?
Well, I think it would be a great story if they could keep playing. You know, they're up against a formidable opponent in Golden State. But if they are the better team, they have the advantage, especially with Blake Griffin. And if they can get a win, I think it would heal some of this and put a little bit behind them so they can just kind of refocus on playing. But the problem is, you know, when you have something else on your mind and things go wrong, like they inevitably do, adversity rises up in a sporting event, it's hard to overcome because you get more easily discouraged. And no one knows what that crowd's going to be like, what the protest situation outside is going to be like. It is a pivotal moment in Los Angeles sports, and I can't wait to see what happens. I mean, Doc Rivers, one of the great things about what he's doing, Bean, is, you know, he's being very honest. He says, hey, I don't know. I don't know what the right thing to do is, and I don't know what's going to happen. We're just going to try to remain together. We'll see if they can do that tonight.
Petros and Money Show airs 3 to 7 again this afternoon on Fox Sports Radio AM 570. Game time for Clippers versus Warriors is going to be at 7:30 at Staples Center. P, I love you, man. Thanks for coming on.
Love you, too. By far the most civilized conversation I've ever had on your show.
Bye-bye. On the phone right now is actor, author, comedian Jim Gaffigan. He's this guy.
I was with a friend last week. I was like, you want to get a donut? He was like, I'm not hungry. I'm like, what does that have to do with it? As if there's ever been a good reason to eat a donut. Well, doctor says I need more powdered sugar in my diet. Donuts are bad for you. And according to my health nut wife, they're not appropriate for a trail mix. I'm just on a different trail, right? Mine leads to the emergency room. That joke will be even funnier when I die from cardiac arrest.
Jim, welcome back to the Kevin DeBeat Show, my friend. How are you?
Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's our pleasure. I have to say I watched saw most of Obsessed when it aired on Comedy Central this Sunday night. I didn't quite finish it. I had to go to bed. But you sell yourself short because you're not nearly as fat as you pretend to be on stage. Aren't people disappointed when they meet you and see that you're actually a relatively fit-looking guy?
Oh, my gosh, that's so flattering. But I am married. That's very flattering, but I guess it's more of, I'm like probably 50 pounds overweight.
So oh, no.
Like, I'm not kidding. I went, my kids play basketball at the Y, which is essentially just them throwing a basketball around. But, they gave a free health test, and the guy determined that I was 50 pounds overweight. I'm not kidding.
That is such a surprise to me. Well, you wear it well. I'm not hitting on you or anything. I think for a guy who's as obsessed with food as you are, I expect you to be one of those guys that Oprah has to knock a wall out of your house to get you out, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, a friend of mine, Neil Brennan, was like, saw my set, and he was like, you should literally be morbidly obese the way you talk about food. But
what is it? I mean, food has been one of the staples of your career for a long time, and it's one of the things we love about you. But has it always been like that for you? Have you been a kid who, like, always, like, while you're eating, you're already excited thinking about what the next meal is going to be? Or do you go to bed at night dreaming about what foods you're going to eat the next day?
I definitely, I grew up in a family where we would be eating, talking about what we're going to eat next, you know. But I think it's something as I got, as I got out of my 20s, the food obsession really kind of kicked in. You know, it's not something that I'm proud of, but it is something, you kind of write what you know. And so I tend to, find something that I have a point of view on and obsess on it, and that usually is about food, unfortunately.
Well, you definitely are the food guy. And you also, and I know this about you from having you in on the program before, but you also mentioned in your special, and it reminded me how unusual it is to see a comedian say, yeah, my wife and I write this material. How did that professional relationship develop with you and her, Jim?
Well, that, as you point out, it is pretty rare, right?
It's very much so.
But I think that, everyone who's in a relationship, there is kind of, your partner or whatever participates pretty significantly in what you do. And, but my wife and I think it's just a strange kind of thing because I was very reluctant to have a writing partner or anything. But my wife's a very funny person, and, it was just, it was a slow progression. You know, she used to help me with acting roles, and then it just kind of just started happening where we were just talking about comedy, and it just ended up where we would come up with bits together. I mean, stand-up's very much a conversation with the audience, so I don't really sit down in front of a computer and write. I kind of just have conversations with my wife, or I'll come up with an idea and kind of improvise with it on stage.
Well, that is fascinating, and apparently you and the wife are doing great because you have how many kids now?
I think it's 4,000.
Yeah, it's got to seem like that sometimes. Do you ever lose track of them? Do you ever, like, have to literally count them to make sure they're all in the car?
It's really out of control in some ways. It's, I love it, but it's just so profoundly exhausting, and I'm convinced they're slowly trying to kill me. I mean, I love being a dad, but it's, even if you have one kid, there's just moments where you're like, this is just too hard. I mean, I can't give up, but it's, like, really hard. And, I used to mix cement in a steel mill, so it's like I know what hard things are. So, but it's hard.
I don't think there's anyone who has, especially four, or I think you have five now for reals, but there's no one who has five kids who hasn't at one point thought about getting in the car and just keep going.
It's like that Bruce Springsteen, song. There's just something about it where you're just like, well, I mean, I look at him sometimes and I'm like, all I got to do is go 1 for 5. Maybe one of them will take care of me and not hate me.
That's right.
But I do love it.
The special is called Obsessed. It aired this past Sunday night on Comedy Central. It's very, very funny. And now it's available in a completely extended and uncensored edition. Available at the Comedy Central app. You can get it on DVD. You get a Blu-ray, CD, vinyl. Boy, I didn't know they were making any stand-up on vinyl. I know vinyl's coming back, but for spoken word too, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the vinyl thing, I always love, because I've been doing some calls this morning, and, you know, obviously somebody just cut and pasted, you know, a paragraph from Comedy Central, because, you know, it is extended, so, like, the album on iTunes has, like, a half hour more material than was in the special, but whenever the uncensored, because it's like, you know, I don't really curse or talk about anything filthy, so it's not like... And now he's even going to say, "Gosh!" You know, it's just,
I almost made my own aside as I was reading that, saying "uncensored edition," but that doesn't mean that much when you're talking about Jim because he's still pretty clean.
Yeah, it's just kind of how it comes out. It's just a little bit, it's not. You know, whenever people ask why my stand-up's so clean, I always say because Jesus told me to be clean. But it's just how it comes out, you know.
Well, the important thing is that it's funny. Nobody goes to see somebody just because they're dirty. They go to see them because they're funny. The show is called Jim Gaffigan Obsessed. You definitely ought to pick it up. And if you never got to Jim's book from last year called Dad is Fat, it's also hilarious. Always a pleasure to have you on the Kevin Bean Show, man. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much. Good talking to you.
Terrific actor and Los Angeles Kings fan Colin Hanks joins us next hour here on the Kevin Bean Show to talk about the team's remarkable comeback. You follow hockey, Ralph.
You're down
zero games to three in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. You're not advancing to the second round, right?
No, very few teams have ever done that. Flyers!
I think it's only ever happened three times in the history of hockey.
Flyers!
So
but,
anyway.
It's very difficult to do. And, you know, they're not there yet. You got to cross your fingers. Hold on.
That's right. Yeah, you got to win. You got to win in the Shark Tank. You still got one more to win before
you move
on.
Wait, they have to go in front of those guys who have all that money and try to pitch a product?
I know, it's very confusing.
That's ridiculous.
Anyway, Colin Hanks next hour and more Kings of Leon tickets coming up for you. Ralph, I'm glad you're here because I wanted to ask you about this story that involves kindergarten in the news. Now, kindergarten is not kindergarten when I was a kid. When I was a kid, you went to kindergarten basically so you could finger paint. I mean, that's pretty much what you did. Is you just sat. It was a way for your parents to get you out of the house sooner, right?
It was a social exercise. You got to play with other kids and you got blocks and paint and you threw the ball around and it was fun times.
Now, aren't they teaching you to read now, like even before you get to kindergarten? Like your kid is behind if he's not reading when he gets to kindergarten now, right?
It's madness. I have my little daughter Olivia, who's four now. She is in preschool. She's in nursery school. And they are already talking about feeder schools and where she's going for junior high school and high school and standardized testing. And it's madness. Kids don't get to be a kid anymore. It's crazy.
What can they possibly have to say in preschool about where the kid is going to high school and college, though?
Because certain schools feed into certain elementary schools, and those elementary schools have a larger percentage of kids that go to the next school and the next school. And then they've got your plan mapped out all the way through college applications.
And is it tough to get into those good schools?
Sure. And then the parents are cutthroat and everybody's jockeying for position. And it's I'm already, my head is swimming and my child's four and I'm already like have fatigue from dealing with her school issues.
Well, here's the story that's going to blow everyone else's mind. Maybe not yours, Ralph, because you're dealing with it. This is a school in New York that has canceled their annual year-end show for kindergartners. Why? Because the kids have to keep working so they will be college and career ready.
Well, yeah! Sure. Sure. You don't want your kid to be a welder because she was dancing.
The interim principal of Harley Avenue Primary School in Elwood, New York, sent out a letter to say that the play that was scheduled to begin on May 14th and carry over to the second day, May 15th, was now going to be canceled because I think you can see we have a responsibility to the students. Please do not fault us for making professional decisions that we know we will never be able to please everyone, but know we are making these decisions with the interests of the children in mind. We are responsible for preparing the children for college and career with valuable lifelong skills and know that we can best do that by having them become strong readers, writers, coworkers, and problem solvers. Therefore, there's no time for the annual play this year.
What are they going to squeeze in those 2 days? Calculus? What are they going to teach those kids in 2 days that they can't let them have some fun? And by the way, the arts and creativity and joy, those are all important life skills too.
Yeah, it does kind of seem like the kid would really get something out of the fun of putting on a play.
Or performing in front of an audience. I mean, that opens you up to the ability to be a public speaker and to, you know, give presentations and stuff. Everything's related.
Yeah. Well, it's an unbelievable story. We asked producer Dave if there's any way he could help us out, so we asked him to line up somebody from this school. I'm looking at this letter again. Dear kindergarten parents and guardians, we hope this letter serves to help you better understand how the demands of the 21st century are changing schools, and more specifically to clarify misperceptions about the kindergarten show. It just goes on and on and on and on about how they can't do it this year. Kids have got to get ready for college. Like, what's up with that? So let's see who we've got on the phone here. The district superintendent, Peter Scordo, joins us now. He's the one who's overseeing the Harley Avenue Primary School in Elwood, New York. Hello, sir. Thanks so much for the time today.
Yeah, how you doing?
Well, we're doing fine. We're just amazed that kids don't have time for a two-day end-of-year kindergarten play because they got to prepare for college.
Yeah, that's right. What's your freaking problem? It's a play, okay? We're not taking food away from these kids, okay? We're trying to teach them how to do something here.
I guess what my problem is isn't there also room for kids that are 5 and 6 years old to be able to have a little fun?
Oh, that's great. That's really going to prepare them for a career. What are they going to be, Tommy Toon here? What are these kids going to be? look at me. I'm Patrick Harris Neal. Look at me. Oh, I'm dancing and singing. Yeah, I'm sorry. This is the real life, okay? So why don't you leave it to the professionals?
Okay, I guess what I'm saying is college for these kids is what? 14 years away or something.
Yeah, well, you know, these kids are stupid, for God's sakes. We got to start now to try to drill some freaking smarts into these kids. Shut up!
Okay.
Shut up, you stupid little kids.
No, don't yell at the kids,
Mr.
Superintendent.
Me. Oh, look, I got finger paint. Oh, I got blocks. Get back to work! Put down the blocks, pick up a calculator, you stupid ass.
Is that a whip? Are you whipping the children?
That's right, it's a whip. Look, I don't hit them with it, okay? I just crack it over their heads. Get their attention.
Like my friend Ralph was saying a minute ago, isn't there something to be gained, though, from the thrill of putting on a show?
Shut up!
Whoa! What? Is that a gun?
I fired in the air. Don't worry about it.
You don't shoot a gun around kids at a preschool.
I said I fired in the air.
I know, but that's a terrible way to run things.
You should see their little eyes wide open. Hey, look, okay, look at me. I'm adding things now. All of a sudden, they're freaking geniuses.
All of a sudden, they're paying attention when you shoot a gun in the air.
Oh, now they want to learn letters. Hey, that's a B, not a D. The loop goes the other way, you dumbass.
Okay.
Oh, my God, these kids are stupid. You want them to do a play?
This is heartbreaking.
Oh, Lou, I'm on stage. I'm Wiggy, the angry hedgehog. That's not going to help them get a job at a Fortune 500 corporation, okay? Okay. Mr. Radio, leave it to the professionals.
Not every minute of every day has to be about finding a career, though. Some of it is social skills, too.
Yeah.
Working together with others.
Yeah.
Having fun.
That's right. Work together and learn how to do some damn math.
You hit one?
Yeah.
Don't worry. We're not playing it for real. We play that ironically. It's supposed to be funny.
Doesn't sound ironic.
Kevin and Bean are wacky. No. They're playing Third Eye Blind.
Yeah,
it's so funny.
Still goes in my ears.
Tuesday morning on the Kevin and Bean Show. Rob is here. Time for another look at the show biz beat. What's going on?
Before I get to the beat, let's give away some stuff. How about passes to the very special K-Rock screening of the new movie, Neighbors?
Yay!
This looks very funny. Seth Rogen, Rose Byrne, Zac Efron, and more. It's a couple with a newborn baby who face unexpected difficulties when they're forced to live next door to a fraternity house. This trailer looks terrific. Have you seen the trailer?
I have.
See where they steal Seth Rogen's airbag?
Oh, yeah.
And they can't figure out what it is.
Oh, yeah.
It's on a chair in his office. And it shoots him through the ceiling. I'm not usually a slapstick guy, but that makes me laugh every time I see it. If you'd like to see an advanced screening of Neighbors, I've got passes to give away. It's happening on May the 6th at the AMC Burbank 16. And don't feel bad if you don't win, because then Neighbors will be in theaters on May the 9th, just a few days later. But if you'd like to see it early, call me now, 1-800-520-1067. First five callers who get through will get a pair of passes to go see Neighbors.
Yummy.
Yummy indeed, beer mug. Also, a little television programming note. Do not forget, tonight, 10 p.m. on AMC, the season finale of Game of Arms.
Yes!
Yes, Game of Arms.
This is the arm wrestling.
It's
show.
So awesome. Are you watching the game of
no.
arms? Come on.
I watched some of the first one. It was stupid.
That's
Ralph.
Awesome.
It was not on my wavelength, I guess, then.
Oh. And the finale, the season finale?
Yeah.
It's an all-day tournament to the death.
So you have to compete multiple times
yes.
in one day?
Yes. Yes.
But it's still arm wrestling, right?
Oh.
What do you win if you're the champion? Bragging rights?
The pride of knowing that you're the champion of arm wrestling.
Okay.
No, that is awesome!
There's money involved, too, but it's just... Oh. I think the Game of Arms cast is going to be on the Today Show this morning. I might have to leave the studio and go watch them, because those guys are the best. It looks like George Clooney may not only be getting married, but he could be out some serious cash.
Well, he had that wager that he'd
yes.
never marry, right?
He had a long-time bet with his buddy Michelle Pfeiffer. I guess they met and became friends on One Fine Day, the movie they made together initially. But they bet on the set of that film. He said, I will never get married again. And Michelle Pfeiffer said, yeah, you will. And he said, I'll bet me. And the bet was $100,000.
Whoa, I didn't know it was that much.
Yes. He bet Pfeiffer $100,000 that he'd never marry again. So... If it is indeed true, as we are being led to believe, that he is engaged to his new girlfriend, then he gets married. He's going to have to pony up $100,000 to the Fife.
Now, if he hadn't gotten married or doesn't get married, does Michelle Pfeiffer eventually have to pay him, or is this one of those terrible one-way bets?
I think when he dies, if he dies single, then
okay.
she will
then
pay
he gets
him,
the money.
She'll pay him $100,000.
Got it.
Because really, how can you... You know, it's easy on one side to verify, but, you know, on the other side,
yeah,
how can she pay him for being single when someday he may get married?
I didn't see the details of the contract, but...
Well, let me look. I got it right here. Let me go through it. I got.
He should have put in some sort of expiration date, like if I don't get married before 50 or 60.
So
clause A, section B, line 4, says, shut up!
Clooney, you smug bastard. Stop playing basketball and get married like the rest of us.
Clooney's girlfriend, Amal Alamuddin.
I bet she's ugly.
She is beautiful and smart and classy. Her law firm that she works for, the barristers and staff at the Doughty Street Chambers, which is the law firm in the UK where she works, released a statement yesterday wishing the couple the best and congratulations on their engagement. So, looks like it's the real deal. I'm sorry Kevin's not here today because he would love to hear about this story about the newly digitally restored and remastered A Hard Day's Night movie, the Beatles film. It's going to be in theaters on the July 4th weekend.
I saw it in theaters
than 50 cities.
Last time it was re-released for some occasion. I don't remember what it was, but it was in theaters about 15 years ago.
But now it's been remixed and remastered. Now
okay.
it's good. Now it's a good one.
Okay.
And they're going to re-release it. Isn't it crazy that, you know, 60 years later, 70 years later, 80, 100? How long has it been since the Beatles? 100 years ago?
About 100 years,
100
yeah.
years ago. That they're still that wildly popular. And they can re-release one of their films.
Yep. And it's a great movie, by the way. It's considered one of the greatest rock and roll movies ever. And it is hilarious. If you've never seen A Hard Day's Night, do yourself a favor and check it out. You'll really enjoy it.
It is kind of charming.
And when the Beatles
arrived
in America,
Rodney, we just don't
really
simply don't have time.
Our lives.
Okay.
I mean, look, we grew hair when the Beatles were on television.
We were all bald before they were on television.
We started bands.
Yeah, there were no bands before the Beatles.
Cooler.
Yeah.
But before all that happened, this news about the Beatles was John F. Kennedy was really put everybody in a sad position.
That's what he did, all right.
And then the Beatles
arrived. JFK.
And sort of changed everybody's lives.
Okay, right. Basically. Supermodel Doutzen Cruz says...
How about the whores?
Supermodel Doutzen Cruz is expecting a girl with her husband, Sonnery James. What kind of names are these?
I don't know. What species are you talking about right
Doutzen
now?
Doutzen Cruz and Sonnery James are having a baby. Their hands are Delta Seam. She's expecting a girl. And she said she does not want her daughter following her footsteps into the modeling world. She does not want her daughter to be a model. She wants her to be a doctor, a lawyer, an Indian chief.
So what?
Instead of saying, you're so beautiful, I'll say, you're so smart. That way she'll have different aspirations in life than beauty and modeling. the age-old question. Is it better to be hot or smart?
I mean, I think ideally you'd want a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd want to be phenomenally drop-dead beautiful and super stupid, but I also don't think you'd want to be, you know, a genius and also hideous to look at. I think you want a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B if you can get it.
Well, it sounds like Doubtson wants her her daughter to be smart and not so much beautiful. She doesn't want her to be
super
a model.
Super sad.
Unless she's really hot, then you got to be a model, right? I think, here's my thing, because I've never been wildly attractive, so I have nothing to draw on. But I've been smarter than some people.
Uh-huh.
And I think smart lasts longer. I think you get more play out of smart than you do out of beauty.
I agree.
Wow. Bean and I agreed on something.
I think so. I think you're right.
Because you can be smart for a long time, but
that's right.
If you can't be beautiful forever, because eventually, even the most beautiful people, you got to age and stuff happens, right?
Ooh.
Right. Today's celebrity birthdays: Jerry Seinfeld, 60 years old today.
Why?
Because he was born 60 years ago. Kate Mulgrew is 59.
Yes.
Daniel Day-Lewis is 57.
I dig.
You dig Daniel Day-Lewis? I do too.
Obviously.
Michelle Pfeiffer,
pretty little seriously. Face.
Beer mug, stop it.
Seriously, why would you do that, Mugs?
Why would
I clearly
you do that?
Had it handled.
He's obviously got a ton of stuff he's playing. Why don't you just not do that?
This is my show. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry.
Michelle Pfeiffer's 56 years old today.
Hoochie coochie.
Carney Wilson of Wilson Phillips is 46.
Yeah, there it is.
Uma Thurman's 44.
Are there any girls here?
Master P is 44.
Seriously.
Yeah, seriously. Tyler Labine is 36.
So what?
I love Tyler Labine. He's great on that new show, Deadbeat. And actress Megan Boone of The Blacklist is 31.
Wet.
Oh, stop it. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
106.7 KROQ. I suspect that song will still be packing the dance floors in 40 years, don't you guys?
Nope.
Nope.
That'll be completely unavoidable.
Nope.
Hey, welcome in Ralph Garman here to the Kevin Beach Show, as well as our good friend DJ Omar Khan. Hi, Omar.
Hola.
We had a fascinating conversation yesterday, just very briefly on the show. Ralph was here doing the showbiz beat, and he mentioned a very tragic story about the loss of DJ Easy Rock,
yes,
who was only 46 years old.
Yeah.
In 1988, he and Rob Bass got together to put a song out called It Takes Two.
Woo!
That not only was a big hit that year, but has continued to be a dance floor favorite every year since then. For 26 years, it's been hard to go to a party where you haven't heard a little bit of this song. And I mentioned at the time,
I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone.
Awesome.
And I mentioned yesterday as we were talking about that song, is it's one of those songs that just came along that no one ever got tired of, that people who are 11 today love just as much as people who are 50, and how few of those songs there are.
I said to Omar, after we were talking about that, I said, because Omar is a very popular and busy party and wedding and DJ.
Yeah, two parties over the weekend.
DJ Omar Khan.
Yeah. And I said to him, that song, It Takes Two, still has to just pack the dance floor. Right?
Absolutely. It's one of my go-tos. Like, if I see a little lull in the dance floor, play that song, it'll jam-pack it.
You said you played it this past weekend at a party,
I played it,
right?
Twice. Yeah,
twice.
I had two different parties. Yeah.
Yeah.
Played it, knocked it out of the park.
By the way, if you ever want to book a DJ Omar Khan, he's a great DJ. You can just go to his website or contact us through K-Rock if you got a wedding or a party or a company event or whatever it is. Yeah. He really does a terrific job.
And he's got a bunch of drugs, too.
Yeah, if you want some coke,
yeah,
whatever you want.
So is there any common thread, Omar, between the types of songs that are perennials, the ones that you can play and every DJ can play all around the country year after year after year? What makes a song a dance floor killer for life?
You know, it's one of these things where obviously, the years go by, some tunes just get played out. Like a couple years ago when The Sopranos had that season finale and they used that one song by Journey, Don't Stop Believing, any DJ could play that at any time and it would rock. You know what
and
I mean?
And then Glee did a successful cover version.
Yeah, right.
Of it too.
So, but then those kind of things play a song out. So if I would play it now, it would kind of be like, you know what I mean? A lot of like hair band rock of the 80s just, it's here and kind of just fades away. The one common thread, though, through any party, I think is funk. If you have some sort of funk in your music, it without a doubt will slam pack the dance floor.
I mean, play that funky music, white boy, still works.
Absolutely. That works. So I've compiled a list in no particular order.
We started talking about songs that are automatic dance generators.
You got to shake your ass when you hear
it. That song, you're at a party or something, you can't help but get out there on the dance floor
absolutely,
and shake your ass.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so we're going to take your calls of the songs that you hear and you cannot stop yourself. You have to get up and get on the dance floor. We want to hear what songs you have on your list at 1-800-520-1067. And as we start taking your calls, Omar, you have a list of some that always work for you.
Always work for me. At the top of the list, and again, these are in no particular order, Rick James, Give It To Me, Baby.
And isn't that interesting because now we're talking about a song that is over 30 years old.
Yeah, as soon as people hear that bass line, when I start mixing it in, you know, people just start throwing their hands up in the air like they don't care.
How about Super Freak?
Super Freak works too. Yeah, that one still works too. Second on my list, It's Tricky, Run DMC. It's Tricky to Rock the Rock.
I mean, that's ageless. It's timeless. How about Walk This Way? Same thing?
Same thing. Next is one of these 80s songs that still works and it hasn't really got played out, depending on what kind of party it is, but 90% of the time it works. Living on a Prayer, Bon Jovi. If I play that later in the night when people are a little sauced up, it works wonders.
I could live without that.
Really?
Yeah, I could live without that song.
Oh, wow.
For the rest of my life.
Really? The chicks love it. So you get the chicks on the dance floor.
I wonder if some of this is nostalgia factor, too. If you remember the good old days when you were out there dancing when that song was fresh.
Yeah.
And then when you hear that, you had a couple cocktails, you're like, oh, I'm back in college. Woo!
Maybe so. This next one it's called Get Low by Little John and the Ying Yang Twins. And this is one of these anomalies that every single time I play it, 12-year-olds, 60-year-olds, they're all bumping and grinding on the dance floor. It's a filthy song.
Are they bumping and grinding with the 12-year-olds?
No, that is gross. Here, check it out. And that's the edited version. When I play a dirty version, it's hilarious. Like some bride and grooms are like, you can play explicit versions, whatever. There's no kids going to be there. So I see grandma and grandpa out there dancing to this song. Yeah. It's crazy. But they totally get into it. And this has got to be one of my top five go-to works every single time. California by Tupac. Straight foot in the town for
California. Yeah. 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 I mean, listen to that beat, listen to that bass line, that groove.
Yeah, just awesome.
Yeah, you can't beat that.
Yeah, I'm surprised the things that are missing on your list.
Well, I mean, there's so many different songs to choose from.
But for example, pops into my head, Dancing With Myself by Billy Idol.
You know, it's weird. It's like, you know, the 80s, it's very niche kind of group. Like you know, I mean, I'm DJing more parties for people in their 30s now.
Right.
You know, that's definitely an older crowd
so
now.
So 90s is like their nostalgia.
Absolutely, 90s. And, they like a lot of LMFAO, Black Eyed
Peas. Let me take one call real quick, and then we'll take a quick break and come back with yours. Let's go to Gloria. She's on line three. She's up first at 1-800-520-1067. The song that you hear as soon as DJ Omar Khan starts playing it, you have to get out on the dance floor and shake that ass. What's your song?
Sir Mix-a-Lot, Baby's Got Back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's irresistible, right, Gloria? You can't sit down while that song is being played.
Yeah. No, you just can't. You got to get up for that one.
Yeah. I think that song's stupid, by the way.
Well, that's an awesome song.
Yeah, I hate that song.
You're wrong.
All right, thanks for the call, Gloria. Have a great day. 1-800-520-1067. What are those can't-miss dance songs for you? We'll take your calls next on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. I'm serious, Ralph. We got to do another Kevin and Bean Party Machine.
I know. These songs are making me ache in my loins.
You hear the titles alone and you just want to dance.
Yes.
We're talking about those songs that are automatic dance floor fillers. They're killers. You can't stop. You can't resist. from
bangers?
Facebook.
You think they're bangers?
I wasn't even going to say that this time, but now they mentioned it. They are kind of bangers. From the Kevin and Bean Facebook page, Stuart writes in White Lines by Grandmaster Flash.
Oh, God, yes.
Melissa, Jump Around by House of Pain.
Come on.
Jason, Young MC, Bust a Move. I mean, come on with these songs, right?
White Lines, I didn't even think about that, but that might be my all-time top hit.
Michael writes in Kevin and Bean Facebook page, how about Brick House?
Mm.
Jamie says, Sunshine on My Vagina always makes me want to dance.
No.
So I think you can tell. All right, let's take your calls. We've got room for just a few here ahead of Colin Hanks joining us on the Kevin and Bean Show. 1-800-520-1067. Let's start with Danny. He's on line one. We're talking about those songs like the It Takes Two with Easy Rock and DJ and Rob Bass that was in the news this week. What's the song that you hear you cannot resist getting out on the dance floor and shaking that ass? Danny, what's your song, please?
Definitely going to be Montel Jordan, This Is How We Do It.
This is how we do it.
Come on.
Yeah.
It just doesn't get any better. That's a great call, Danny. Thanks so much. Let's go to Celia. She's up next. She is on line two. Celia, thanks for listening to the show. What's your go-to song?
Hey, by Outkast.
As we found out at Coachella over the past couple of weekends, irresistible, absolutely.
And you know, that's one of those songs, and I think these songs all have that quality, is like you hear it and it's a big hit and you get kind of tired of it, but then it comes around again when you haven't heard it for a while. You're like, oh my God, yes, I forgot how much I love that song. I do want to shake it like a Polaroid picture.
And I think it's so fascinating that, like, that song is, what, 10 years old, maybe?
Right, right.
But some of these songs are 30 years old, and they still have that same quality, that same timeless quality where it sounds like they could have come out today or they could come out in 20 years. You know what I mean? And they're still classics. Robert writes in, how about the Gap Band, You Dropped a Bomb on Me?
Oh, God, yes, that's a good one.
Can't beat it. All right, how about Michael? He's up next. He's on line three on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Mike, thanks for calling. What's your song?
Wild Thing.
Let's do the Wild Thing.
Tone Loke didn't leave us much, but with Wild Thing and Funky Cold Medina, he is never going to be forgotten, that's for sure. Thanks for the call.
Omar was right. A lot of these have an R&B or funk flavor to them, now that I think about it. Almost every one of them's got that quality.
The Rock doesn't seem to age as well, for whatever reason. I don't know why that is. We're not talking about a lot of rock songs here, the ones that people really, you know, can't resist.
Hey, where's Footloose? Yeah, where's that?
Let's go to Julia. She's up next. She's on line five here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hi, Julia. What's your song?
I'm going to go with Usher. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That is a song that you... Wow, I almost wish I hadn't heard that because I am going to be thinking about that all day long today. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Javier. He's down on line seven. He's up next. Talk about a stone cold classic. Javier, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Bow, wow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yay. Bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yay.
Atomic Dog.
Come on.
When I'm out there walking the street, you may compete.
I hate this because I want to hear the whole song. That's why we got to do the party machine, because I want to hear the whole song. Thank you, Javier. Let's do one more. How about Stacy? Stacy's up next on line eight. Stacy, thank you for calling the Kevin and Bean Show. Unfortunately, we're out of time, so we're going to give you the final word. What's that go-to song for you?
September by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Old school. Old school, but classic.
Yes.
Great stuff. Thanks so much for calling. Thanks for listening.
Let's go. Go. Kings, go! Go, Kings, go! Go, Kings, go! I can't hear you! I'm losing my mind! You need to lose your minds! Let's go!
Okay.
Ah!
Thank you, Will. We got it. Thank you. The Kings are only the ninth team to come back for a Game 7 after starting a Stanley Cup playoff series down 3-0. Game 7 is going to be tomorrow night in San Jose. We're very excited to welcome back to the program for the first time during the playoffs this year, the man who was our official NHL playoff correspondent the year the Kings won the Cup. Let's see if history can repeat itself. Colin Hanks joins us back on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock right now. Hi, Mr. Hanks.
Just as I planned, everyone thought I wasn't going to call in during the playoffs. It's all going according to plan so far.
Yeah, you're just saving the call until when we needed it, right?
When we need it the most, of course.
Colin,
of course.
Were you there last night?
I was not there last night. A lot of things have changed since the Kings won a Stanley Cup. Mainly, I have a second kid now.
So, ouch.
that really bites into my my hockey viewing time, unfortunately.
You don't get to go in person very much. Were you at least able to watch it on the TV?
I was able to watch it on the TV, and oh my goodness, what nerves I had last night. That was a highfalutin, high-paced hockey game last night.
Absolutely, and anytime you go in there and it's an elimination game, as all of these games are right now for the Kings, obviously you're nervous. And I'm so glad that the thing wasn't decided by the go-ahead goal that seemed to cause so much controversy with San Jose fans.
Yeah, I mean, well, and to be fair, in the heat of any playoffs, regardless of the sport, if there's a disputed call, the team that doesn't get that call is always going to, you know, have sour grapes about it. But it wasn't a reviewable play. You know, if that puck was lodged in his pads, you can't push the goalie over the goal line. But the puck wasn't lodged in his pads. He didn't go over the goal line, so it was a goal. And then we got two shortly thereafter. So it all worked out good, and now I'm really looking forward to a Game 7.
Boy, I am too. I really am. And just to put a final point on this before we move on to Fargo, you have to give it up for the Kings. I mean, to keep playing as hard as they have. I mean, it would be so easy to feel defeated. You're playing a very good team like the Sharks. But these guys are coming out and playing as hard or as harder as they ever have before to push it to Game 7. It's been inspirational to watch these dudes.
We all love to make fun of the Sharks and Sharks fans saying that they choke. But deep down, we all know what a good hockey team they are. They're a great hockey team. And when we were down 3-0. Look, I mean, I didn't think we would be down 3-0, but at the same time, I couldn't say that I was shocked because that's how good of a hockey team they are.
Right.
But our team is resilient. They've been together a long time. Our boys are pretty solid like that. And they, you know, when they take something to heart, they really do, one game at a time, and look
that's
what
right.
they've done. And, you know, and by the way, two of our guys have experience with this before. Jeff Carter and Mike Richards did this in Philly in 2003, came back from a 3-0 hole to win the seventh game. So there is precedent for this, obviously. Just, you know, with players on our team, it's going to be really exciting tomorrow night, that's for sure.
And the Kings owner is not a racist, too. Let's also point that out. That's something else that's awesome about them.
That is just a bonus. That's just a bonus just right there on the top right there.
All right, so you got hockey tomorrow night. Tonight, I direct your attention to the FX channel at 10 o'clock for a little show that we like to call Fargo. Why do we call it that? Because that's the name of the show. Colin is one of the great stars on this, along with Martin Freeman and Billy Bob Thornton and Bob Odenkirk and Oliver Platt. I mean, wow, what a show. We're so glad we have you on for this because we have been loving it, Colin. When you first heard, hey, they're trying to adapt that awesome Coen Brothers movie to a TV show, I bet you, like the rest of us, were pretty skeptical that it would work.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, the first question was, why?
Why? Exactly. Why, it's already been done to perfection.
Why would you want to do that? What are you going to do that's better? You know, what are you going to do to improve upon the movie? And the simple answer was we're not going to do anything to improve on the movie. We're going to make our own story that runs parallel to them. So it's the same tone, same humor, same violence. All of the tenets of that film that people remember, that people like. But it's all new characters. It's all new story. And it interweaves with the movie in a lot of weird ways, weird, cool ways that I think people get really excited about. But more importantly, the writing was so good. It was so well written. The characters were so well written. I didn't care what it was called. It didn't matter. It was so good. I had to be a part of it.
I agree. The writing is great, but the casting, and I mentioned all those names not because they're stars, but because they're unbelievable actors. I mean, we've never seen Martin Freeman like this before. As much as we loved him in The Office and Lord of the Rings and other things he's done, I mean, this is a great performance by him, completely unexpected by him. And Billy Bob, we've seen do great performances like this before, but even this character is not like anything he's ever played before.
No, Billy Bob, I mean, everybody across the board, I think, was really jumping at the opportunity to do this because it was so well written and each character is so well defined, that it sort of plays to a lot of people's strengths. And those strengths might not necessarily be well-known at this stage. You know, like, again, Martin Freeman, I mean, he's an incredibly talented, funny dude, but he's doing stuff in this show that no one's ever seen him do before. And he's knocking it out of the park. I mean, he's just killing it. He's so good. And Billy Bob, I'm sorry, he's Billy Bob. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's so, like, he's just devours this role and is so good and so dark and scary, but also funny that, you know, I mean, everybody's just playing to their strengths in a really fantastic way, and I'm just lucky that I got to be included in the bunch.
You can't take your eyes off Billy Bob when he's on the screen. Now, I don't think I'm giving too much away to say that your character, of course, is a police officer in Duluth. You're a police officer in Single Dad named Gus Grimley, and you have a scene in episode one or two, I don't remember which, where you pull over Billy Bob, and you plan on giving him a ticket. And the conversation that you two have is about the most tense thing I've seen on TV this year. I mean, I was horrified that you weren't going to get out of that episode alive. And it was weird because it was just two guys talking, but there was so much menace there that you could tell that it could go south so quickly. I mean, was that a tough scene for you guys to shoot, Colin?
Yeah, that one was a tough scene only because we had to shoot it over the course of a few days. There were some scheduling issues that made it sort of difficult, so we had to shoot it on two consecutive Fridays. But that is really the only thing that was difficult about it. That's just like the mechanics of it. Overall, that's a very easy scene to act out because, A, it's just a conversation between two people. There's not a lot of movement. There's not a lot of surprises there, not a lot of camera angles. But more importantly, it's a conversation where I just get to listen to Billy Bob threaten me, you know, and do it convincingly, very convincingly and very well. So, you know, that to me is one of the, you know, that was one of the best scenes I've ever been a part of. That was the audition piece for me. That was the whole reason why I wanted to do it, was that scene.
Interesting. And now that I think about it, I guess that had to have happened on episode one, because episode two, we start to see you kind of rethinking how you handled it, again, without giving anything away. And I suspect that the decision you made that night is going to have continued repercussions with what's going on with Billy Bob's character.
Oh, yeah. For the whole rest of the season, that one particular scene, you know, Gus letting Lauren go, that is the impetus for everything. He tries to atone for that for the whole rest of the season, and it gets weirder and darker and a whole lot scarier for Gus as the season progresses.
All right, let me ask you one more thing about Officer Grimley, and that is there a place you can direct me to where you have supermodel neighbors who apparently don't have curtains on their apartments? Where can I go live?
Fargo.
Apparently that's the answer, or Duluth, depending on where you are.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Duluth. You got me. You got me. Duluth.
Are we going to see more of that develop? You guys have kind of peered out at each other through your respective windows.
Well, you maybe. I don't know. Why don't you check in at FX tonight at 10 p.m.? That's a professional plug right there. I don't mess around.
I think that's an excellent idea. The show is great, you guys. If you had any reservations like Kala did, throw them away because they're doing brilliant work over there. The show's called Fargo, and it's only going to be 10 episodes, right?
10 episodes, yeah. So we've got 8 more episodes to go. But
right,
you can binge, you can stream it, you can find ways, you know, in this day and age, you can find ways to get in, you know, I mean, you could hop in whenever you want. It's a good show.
Yeah, don't sleep on this, you guys. It is terrific on FX. It is called Fargo. Colin, I hope we get to talk to you again maybe in round two sometime. Go Kings, go, man. Thanks for the time.
Go Kings, go. One game at a time, I believe.
Appreciate it,
guys. Thanks.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
That's right. He's a wooden hand.
I've heard that's actually true.
George Clooney is officially getting married, I guess. I told you yesterday the story was going around, but I hadn't heard any confirmation. Now, the law firm that his soon-to-be wife works for released a statement yesterday wishing the couple all the best and congratulations on their engagement, and looks like it's the real deal. Which means he loses $100,000 to Michelle Pfeiffer, because they made a bet a long time ago where George said he'd never get married again. Amal Alamuddin is her name. She has to change it to something easier to say.
Amal Clooney.
Yeah, that'd be easier. Amal in the Night Visit. Yeah, I got that. No one else did. Chelsea Handler.
Hold on. Say it again. I want to see if I get what. Say it again.
Amal and the Night Visitors.
No.
Okay. Chelsea Handler. She has negotiated a deal for a new show with Netflix, according to the New York Post. That's going to make it so much easier for me to ignore her. I love that about her. So that's good news.
And she's a whore!
More TV news. Sarah Silverman is joining the cast of Showtime's Masters of Sex.
Oh. That's a serious show.
Yeah, it is. It's got some comic elements to it.
Right, right.
But it's, it's a serious period drama about the sex team of Masters and Johnson, who did the sex study back in the 50s. She'll play Helen, a palm reader who's a former lesbian lover of Betty.
Okay.
Any of that ringing a bell?
I like Sarah Silverman. I think she's a good actress.
She is. She'll be good on that show, too. Good tone for her. And while we're talking about good actors, Giancarlo Esposito. You know him from Revolution. He was Gus on Breaking Bad.
That's right.
Earned an Emmy nomination for that. He's been in a bunch of Spike Lee's movies like Do the Right Thing and School Days, Malcolm X. Very talented guy. He is getting his star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame this morning. So if you want to go down and wish Giancarlo all the best, you can check it out. 11:30 this morning, right across the street from Besso Restaurant at 6351 Hollywood Boulevard. And don't forget, Game of Arms tonight. Arm wrestling, Bean!
That's my point. Right,
next time you come down here, when you come down, what, was it Weenie Roast River? You and me are going to arm wrestle live on the air. You and me.
I think you would win.
Let's do it.
I used to be an outstanding arm wrestler, but I've had some injuries. I blew out a tendon, and it never healed quite properly.
I used to be an outstanding arm wrestler.
I used to be very, very good at it, but I did not.
You have never arm wrestled in your life.
No. I wasn't a national champion or anything like that, but I held my own in my group.
I'm sure you hold your own all the time.
What I'm saying is I no longer have that muscle strength that I once did. I think I would lose. I'm willing to try, I think I would lose.
Game on.
Okay.
Game of arms.
I'm just telling you, I'm just doing it for fun, though. I don't expect to win.
No wagering?
No, okay. No wagering.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Jerry Seinfeld, 60 years old. Imagine how mortifying it would be to lose in an arm wrestling thing to be. I may want to rethink this. Because the sheer, just by the remotest possibility he wins, I'd have to kill myself. I'd have to fall on my own sword. Jerry Seinfeld, 60. Kate Mulgrew is 59. Daniel Day-Lewis is 57. Michelle Pfeiffer is 56 years old. Carney Wilson of Wilson Phillips is 46. Uma Thurman's 44. Master P, also 44. Tyler Levine is 36 years old. And the best damn FBI agent on television.
The FBI!
Megan Boone from The Blacklist. She's 31 today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
We want you to be at Kings of Leon. Two big shows coming to Southern California October 3rd and 5th. The 3rd at the Hollywood Bowl. The 5th at the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater. Tickets are available now for those tickets. We have tickets in the fourth row with a game we like to call The Hardest Game in the World Part 2.
It's The Hardest Game in the World 2. The Revenge of the Game Die Harder Electric Boogaloo. If you thought words were hard, wait till you try music. This time, it's personal.
Mr. Announcer Man.
Hello, Kevin and Bean.
It's been a while since we played this game. What do you mean if we thought words were hard, now try music?
Well, usually when we play the hardest game in the world, we play a title of a song backwards, and you need to guess what it is.
That's right.
In the hardest game, too, we'll play a Kings of Leon song, and all you need to do is identify what song that is.
That sounds easy if you're a Kings of Leon fan.
I almost forgot it's backwards!
Oh, no!
Yeah!
That does sound like it would make it a little more difficult, I guess.
It's the hardest game in the world, too!
So we play it one time for you backwards. That's all you're going to get. You have to identify it by title. If you're right, you go into the drawing. Someone will win tickets in the fourth row for Kings of Leon. Let's meet our first contestant. We'll just take him in order, beer mug, starting with line one. It's going to be Dennis up first here on the Kevin and Bean Show.
First up is Dennis!
Mr. Announcer Man, who's our first contestant?
I have one goddamn job to do during this game.
It's been a while since we played the game. I forgot how it goes.
First up is Dennis. He's a fire marshal.
Dennis, listen up. Here's a Kings of Leon song backwards. You identify it by title. You go into the drawing. Good luck.
Sex on Fire?
Well done.
Turns out that song is same forwards and backwards.
Yeah, what's that about? All right, you're on hold, Dennis. Who's next, Mr. Announcer Man?
Next up is Brian. He works with people who need assistance living.
How about assistance talking?
Hello?
Hey, Brian, listen up. Here's your Kings of Leon song. Good luck, sir.
Okay. Oh my God, I'm so stumped.
Take a stab at it. If you don't know, you might as well guess. Sorry, we were looking for Molly's Chamber. Which I believe was the first song K-Rock played from Kings of Leon. A little old school. All right, who's our next contestant, please?
Next up is Matt. He's an attorney.
Hey, Matt, welcome to the show. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine. Listen up. If you don't know, guess. It doesn't hurt you to guess. It doesn't cost you anything to take a stab at it. Here's your song.
Wait for me.
I'm sorry. No, we were looking for Use Somebody.
By the way, these songs sound awesome backwards. I love them.
Do you now, Mr. Announcer Man?
Next up is Alex. He works with disabled adults.
Hi, Alex. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey, what's up, guys?
It's interesting how many of our listeners have jobs where they work with disabled or handicapped people, and maybe that's why they like the Kevin and Bean Show so much.
Zing! I'm
starting to notice some sort of a trend here. All right, Alex, you know how the game is played. Listen up. Here's your KOL song. Name it.
I'm going to say Wait For Me.
No, this time it was Crawl. You better learn to crawl. Thanks for playing those. So far, only Dennis is in the drawing for the Kings of Leon tickets, but I have hope for our next contestant.
Next up is Garrett. He's an engineer. Boop, boop.
Hi, Garrett. Welcome to the show. How have you been doing listening on hold?
Morning, party people. I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
Okay, well, I'm doing great, too. Listen up. Here's your song.
That's it.
Well, it is the hardest game in the world, part two. It's not supposed to be easy. What's that Kings of Leon song, please?
Radioactive.
Not even a song by Kings of Leon, but excellent guess anyway. The Bucket is what we were looking for. Now, when I said take a guess, I meant take a guess of a Kings of Leon song.
They really do have a Radioactive song.
Oh, do they? All right, I apologize that if I'm wrong.
Hey, Jude.
All right. We have time for just one more, Mr. Announcement. Who's our final contestant?
Next up is Christian. He's a plumber.
Christian, don't guess. Play that funky music, okay?
All right, man. I'm ready.
Here's your Kings of Leon song. Good luck.
Man, I knew all the ones before. Is this one
sure.
Wait For Me?
Yeah. It is Wait For Me!
Yeah!
Very impressive. You are one step closer. Let's find out if you can seal the deal. Is it Christian or is it Dennis? Only one can win. Tickets in the fourth row for Kings of Leon. I think Christine is doing the drawing for us today in Lisa's absence. Who is it, Christine?
All right. The winner is Christian.
Yay!
Christian, way to be, my friend.
Thank you, man. I'm so stoked, dude. I was trying all day yesterday.
Oh, fantastic. Well, congratulations. You're also in the grand prize drawing to see the band in London. We'll do all that on Monday morning. Thank you, Mr. Announcer Man.
Thank you, Kevin Envy.
Thanks, Kevin Envy. Awesome.
That was the hardest game in the world, too. The Revenge of the Game Die Harder Electric Boogaloo. Coming next summer, the hardest game in the world, 3D.
I don't know what's going on this hour, but that is Bad Blood by Bastille here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Coming up next, we've got Naked and Famous singing Young Blood. And then earlier in the hour, we played Weezer Bloody Holly. So it's insane how much blood is going on the show today. I don't know what's happening. Rob is here now. Time for the Showbiz Beat here on the Kevin and Bean Show for a Tuesday at 9:38. What's going on?
Not enough blood, in my opinion.
Really?
Yeah.
Look at a beer mug still standing there, unhurt.
No, exactly. Not one drop of his blood has hit the floor today. Yeah. Unacceptable.
That's a failure at the workplace.
It is indeed. Well, romances in Hollywood don't last very long. It's all over.
Trying to think who you might be talking about.
Supermodel Cara Delevingne and Fast and the Furious actress Michelle Rodriguez. Apparently they have split up.
Lesbians are just like us.
They are. Kara's been posting pictures of herself getting cozy with her fellow supermodel, 22-year-old Suki Waterhouse.
Okay, then.
Now, Suki Waterhouse, she was dating somebody else. Wasn't she dating Bradley Cooper?
That sounds right.
Wow, I'll tell you. They're just like us.
They go from one smoking hot person in relationship to another.
The salute to tuna.
Oh, come on now. Can't be like that.
I didn't come over here to eat tacos.
Kesha has a new boyfriend.
I only pay for this much carpet, okay. But look at how much I got.
All right, easy. Kesha is, she's healthy, she's fit, and now she's madly in lust with a brand new dude. The UK's Daily Mail caught photos of Kesha just going at, just like, just tonsil hockeying it up with a guy at a flea market in L.A., and he's got just a huge beard, a ton of tattoos. It's just a perfect Kesha moment, making out with just a smelly dude with a beard with tattoos at a flea market. That is so Kesha.
Now, I thought she cleaned up her act a little bit. What did we have? She dropped the dollar sign, looked like she was clean and sober.
She
and
is.
Was not going to be involved in nonsense like this anymore.
Doesn't mean she doesn't need a little something once in a while to keep her warm when the nights get cold, you know what I'm saying? And right. She loves the beards. She's always had a thing for the beards.
Look, all I'm grateful for is she doesn't seem to be making any new music.
That's me too. Whatever it takes. But she belongs in a flea market.
I think, she does.
I think the guy with the beard had a flea market in his beard, actually. Different kind of flea. Chrissy Teigen. You know supermodel Chrissy Teigen?
I sure do. She's the one who's married to John Legend.
Yeah. They're just another one of those ridiculously attractive couples that just have better lives than we do. By the way, did you see Chrissy Teigen on the Amy Schumer show?
Mm-mm.
Oh, you got to catch it. See, I think if you go to Comedy Central, you can see the clip. It's Chrissy Teigen, the premise is, has tired of supermodeling, and now she is a couples therapist.
I like it.
And so Amy Schumer shows up, like in sweatpants, no makeup, all schlubby with her boyfriend who doesn't want to bone her anymore. And they have to talk about their problems with therapist, Dr. Chrissy Teigen.
I like it.
And he's like, yeah, so anyway, he just can't focus on his relationship with Amy Schumer at all because he keeps hitting on Chrissy Teigen during the therapy session.
That Amy Schumer show is great this season.
Very, very funny show. I recommend it highly. Anyway, the reason I bring up Chrissy is that she confessed to Cosmopolitan magazine that she is a member of the Mile High Club with her husband, John Legend. They were on their way to Thailand to see her parents flying up there in first class, and they just decided they could not bridle their passion any longer. They didn't use the restroom. They just went for it in first class.
Yeah! That's hot!
We were under a blanket, she says. We weren't even in one of those pod things. I feel like we should get a trophy for that. How come that kind of stuff never happens when I'm flying anywhere? I just get sitting next to some beer mug look-alike who wants to talk about why he can't get peanuts on this flight and how disappointed he is.
I was on a... This might be an interesting phone topic one day, by the way, to talk about people's Mile High Club experiences on a plane, getting away with it, or being there while somebody else is getting away with it. But it happened to me. I was on a flight coming back from Las Vegas one time. And
you were
there
was a witness?
I was a witness, yeah. There was a woman it was a late night flight, and I think a lot of people were either sleeping or not paying attention. It wasn't super full, but she was just sitting on his lap, and that was just happening.
Wow.
Yeah, right there on the plane.
Oh. Did you have to, join in?
No.
You know?
Wasn't anything like that. I tried my best not to look, but it's hard not to. It's a pretty distracting thing. I mean, they did have a blanket on, but...
Excuse me, stewardess, can I get a blanket myself? I need a little coverage. A little coverage for my own action.
I saw a movie the other day, or a TV show, I can't remember which.
You let them have sex on your plane, because I know you're strictly a no-sex policy anywhere within 50 feet of you.
That's right. I should have laid down the law.
Yeah.
I saw an episode of some show I watched just recently. I wish I could remember what it was, but a couple had sex in a restroom on an airplane. But it was so obviously a movie airplane restroom because it was three times the size of any bathroom I've been on a plane in the last 20 years. There's no way there's even room for two people in the current day restrooms on an airplane.
Had a big water fixture in the center of it.
It was
a chandelier.
Yeah.
A buffet table.
I mean, there was enough room that they could both, move around and stuff. I mean, you know how tight it is just for one person in those restrooms.
Yeah. People have always said to me, wow, you know, you're a freak. You've got a history. You must have mile-high'd it. I was like, nope, not once, not ever. Not never. You're right. Because those bathrooms are ridiculous.
Ridiculously small.
I can't even go to the bathroom in a bathroom.
Right.
I like comfort. I'm a comfort guy. Greece did so... Nope. NBC did so well with their live telecast of The Sound of Music... that Fox has now announced they're getting into the game by doing a live musical production on their network as well. They're going to mount Grease.
That is a great choice.
It really is.
I bet NBC is ticked, too, by the way, that they brought back the live-action musical, and now Fox is stealing one with a great one to do that they could have done.
Yeah. I mean, why do you do a dusty old musical like Sound of Music when you can do something with the Grease, which is fun and young, and they're going to have a young ensemble cast they'll put together. It'll be a three-hour live event that will air sometime in 2015. And it's going to be an amalgamation of both the original 1978 Broadway musical and then the 78 movie, which had a lot of songs in it that weren't featured in the Broadway version. So they're going to take the best of both worlds and make one big production out of it.
It's Olivia Newton-John, star of Grease, the most successful movie musical of all time.
Oh, there you go.
Why do you have that audio? Why is that a clip that you held on to?
I don't know. I don't know.
I heard NBC's going to do Peter Pan next. So they're really appealing to that octogenarian audience that
no kidding.
Can't get enough Peter Pan musicals.
I wonder if who's already lobbying to be cast in Grease, though. I mean, that's going to be a high-profile role for somebody.
Every former Disney star that has a pseudo-pop music career is going to want to be Sandy, I guarantee.
All the Glee kids.
And Demi Lovato and all those cats are going to be vying for that for sure. And Coldplay is doing something really cool. Okay, next story.
Could you elaborate?
You want some details? They have taken hidden lyrics from 9 songs on their new album, Ghost Stories, and they've put them in 9 envelopes, in 9 libraries, in 9 countries all over the world.
What's the point?
Well, I'm getting there.
Okay.
All of the envelopes are hidden in books that feature ghost stories. The album's name is Ghost Stories. One of the envelopes, of the 9, has a golden ticket inside. It's a pair of seats to see Coldplay in London. And they're revealing clues to the location of the envelopes on their Twitter account.
Two. Much work.
Oh, come on. This is awesome. It's like
too much work.
It's like Willy Wonka, but with music. There's a golden ticket out there.
Uh-huh.
And if you win, if you're smart enough to figure out the clues, you get the tickets. You get to see them in London.
Okay.
Come on, Bean. Where's your sense of whimsy?
So of the 5 people who will attempt to win this contest, the hopes are that one of them will put all the clues together and get
it? You son of a bitch. For example, yesterday was the first clue that was revealed on their Twitter account, okay? The mega library in MX is a capital idea. Search for Charlie D's festive spirits en español. Andale, andale. Hashtag lyrics hunt.
Well, that's stupid.
It's not stupid at all. Figure it out. Mega library in MX is a capital idea.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Well, by of course, that must mean the only possible answer is the Vasconcelos Library in Mexico City, the capital of Mexico, MX. See?
Obviously.
Capital idea. Search for Charlie D's festive spirits en español. Well, that must be. The only possible answer is the Spanish version of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
Okay. Let me just interject here again because you're being caught up in the magic of this ridiculously terrible
idea. This is an awesome idea.
Let's say even if I cared enough to analyze the clues and put two and two together, how does that help me? I'm not flying to Mexico City to pull the paper out of a book.
Well, there are Coldplay fans in Mexico, Bean, and one of them figured out that clue, went to the library, opened up the envelope, which was inside the Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, the Spanish version, and that envelope did not contain the golden ticket, but...
that is so stupid!
But there are 8 more out there, and the hunt continues. Come
no
on!
No bueno.
This is fun.
So no bueno.
This is fun!
It's terrible.
Oh, I hate you.
It's a horrible idea.
It's so much fun. It's Willy Wonka!
It's way too much work.
I've got a golden ticket.
Are
How
you still...
can you love it? It's crap.
It's genius. Can I suggest an easier way to see Coldplay at concert?
Ticketmaster!
Boy, you are just a wet blanket. First you won't let Dave have sex in your house, now you won't get into the lyrics hunt.
I don't like nonsense.
You don't like fun.
I don't. I don't care for it.
Where fun goes to die.
I like the world to be buttoned down.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Comedian Jerry Seinfeld is 60 years old today. Actress Kate Mulgrew turns 59. Daniel Day-Lewis
Hack.
What a great actor he is.
Oh, that's what I mean. Best actor ever.
57 years old. Michelle Pfeiffer is 56. Carney Wilson of Wilson Phillips is 46 years old today. Uma Thurman turns 44. Master P, 44 years old today. Actor Tyler Labine. You watching that Deadbeat?
I've seen a couple. It's great.
Very entertaining.
It's very entertaining. He's very, very likable.
36 years old today. And the best FBI agent on television.
The FBI!
Megan Boone from The Blacklist celebrates her 31st birthday. And if we had time here, I would get into it with you about why you think she is the worst FBI.
She's a terrible FBI agent.
She's the best.
She should be kicked off the force.
She is an awesome.
She makes terrible decisions. Profiler. She always puts the mission in jeopardy.
She's a genius.
She
and
doesn't
she
follow
everything
orders. I mean, look, just one thing, when spoiler alert from a couple of weeks ago, but when she finally unveiled her husband as being her monitor.
Yes.
What did she do? By herself tried to interrogate them in her home with no backups.
Yes, because it was personal.
Enabling him to escape.
It was personal.
But you know what?
She needed that time. She needed some closure. She needed to get alone with him.
Right. But he wouldn't have escaped had she, at a minimum, just gotten some goddamn backup like they train you to do on day one in the FBI Academy.
But if she turns him over to the FBI, then she has to spill all of the secrets that's going on between her and Red, and she's not ready to give that up to the Bureau.
She let
yet.
Him go.
Who knew that if you break somebody's thumb, they can get out of handcuffs?
She should have known that from the Academy.
Oh,
just another rookie mistake.
Yeah, she wasn't there
she
on the
day. She makes one mistake after another.
Broken thumb class at the Academy. Come
I'm
on.
Just saying she makes a lot of horrible choices for somebody who's supposed to be a good agent.
She's the best.
Kids, you're both just awful.
That's true. Megan is 31 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you so much, Ralph, and I hope you and everyone else will come on back for another all-new Kevin Bean Show tomorrow
nope.
here on K-Rock. I was anticipating that. Nope. We got Kings of Leon tickets in the third
nope.
row for you tomorrow.
Nope.
The Roastmaster General himself, comedian Jeff Ross, will be on the program tomorrow.
Nope.
Looking forward to that. Got a brand new Kevin Bean Internet Roundup
nope.
set up for you.
Nope.
And one of the pioneers of daytime television, the one and only Maury Povich.
You are not the father.
Maury Povich has a paternity test results to read for somebody on the Kevin Bean Show. That's tomorrow right here. We'll see you then. Thanks.